afternoon, and welcome to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip. I'm Jeff Pedro, in with Mark Avery, and we're from Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road, Moraine, right across from DP&L. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you can give us a call at 937-293-3914, and we'd be glad to assist you with any of your firearms-related needs. I want to start off today's show with sending out a big thank you, big heartfelt thank you to all of our members and people who were interested in coming down to visit us yesterday in our marathon day of 12 hours down at the range.
Wow. Yeah,
from 9 to 9. It was a great day, but it made it bearable to see all those happy faces coming in, friendly faces coming in and sharing good times. People made some great firearms purchases, and some people took advantage of some of the training bargains that we had going on, and it was just a great day all around. And again, I'm very grateful for your support. And if what we had happen was any kind of indication of how Black Friday went around the Miami Valley, I think it was a tremendous success, and I got to believe that's the case, because I saw a lot of people out yesterday. I told Mark on my way into the show, we had a show yesterday morning from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m., and on my way in, I saw that the parking lot of a couple of local businesses were packed, and there was a lot of traffic on the roadway, so people were out spending their dollars trying to fuel the economy, and that certainly was the case at Sim Trainer. I know that Mark and I put in for a long day, and the two of us at about 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock last night, when we were starting to wind down, it was all we could do just to get to our vehicles and get out of there, because it was a long day, but it was well worth it. It was again a heartfelt thank you goes out to all of our loyal customers. I want to just remind our listeners that we have our 2012 classes now posted on the internet on our website, and encourage you to try to get registered early, because as has been the trend recently, things are filling up pretty quickly. We're already booked through December on most all of our classes. There are a few slots available in our concealed carry class that's being offered December 12th through the 15th, but I know there were at least four people that registered for that yesterday, so it's getting close to being full. And then the new cycle will begin about the second week of January. But First Shots classes are full. We might have a couple slots left in our December basic class, but if you have any aspirations of getting into our training classes, I would encourage you to do that quickly so that you can get preferential scheduling consideration. The way we do that, just because of the volume, is once you register and pay, that solidifies or guarantees your slot in the class. So please take advantage of the posting of all those 2012 dates and figure out what works best for your calendar and get yourself registered, regardless of what that class might be. If it's First Shots, basic handgun, concealed carry, the legal update for concealed carry for those who have already taken their concealed carry, and maybe it's been 7 or 8 years since you last had any formal training, the legal update's a great refresher, because you get in there and you'll get an opportunity to have our attorney who teaches that portion of the course give you a thorough overview of all the legal issues as they've evolved over the last several years and as they currently stand based on some recent changes to the law. And I strongly encourage that. Even though the state has not yet mandated any specific training protocol, I think that's the best logical first starting place for somebody who hasn't had any formal training in a while, because one of the biggest issues concerning concealed carry, it's not so much whether you can handle your gun and use it if you have to, it's whether you have the mental preparation and the knowledge, the requisite knowledge that goes along with that whole process to make good decisions if and when that situation ever creeps up. And I want to encourage people to take advantage of that. In addition, we have our advanced training courses, handgun 1 through 5. They're offered on a quarterly basis, and they will begin on the Thursday night rotation, meaning on the first quarter and the third quarter, we offer them on Thursday evenings, and on the second quarter and the fourth quarter, we offer them on Saturday evenings. And the reason we do that is to afford people the opportunity for, again, some scheduling flexibility, realizing that all kinds of things enter into your plans, whether it's kids' activities or situations that crop up at work or sickness, whatever the case might be. The unique aspect about our handgun 1 through 5 package, if you register for the full package, we give you a full year and beyond if necessary to complete those classes, just so you take number 1 first and number 5 last. And we're pretty reasonable when it comes to scheduling options. I just got an email today from a guy who just wanted to remind me that he wasn't able to make handgun level 3, and he wanted to make sure he was able to get in the first session in the first quarter, because he knows that, that's the move and shoot class, probably the critical class for him in his particular situation, because he's a pretty good shooter to begin with, but he wants to start to come down to shoot in our competitive Tuesday night league, and he mentioned that that would give him a great advantage. I agreed with him, so we're going to make sure that we get him in that class. But if you have any inclination to get involved in or enrolled in any of our classes, take a look at the website, sim-trainer.com, the civilian training portion, and you can find out what those dates are. You know, yesterday we had a great show. We had people call in with some great questions, some great comments. We talked about several issues. One of the issues was an article that was in yesterday's paper that stating that there are some problems with the checking system and for the reporting of people with different types of prohibiting circumstances, whether it be mental illness or criminal backgrounds. But again, a lot of that shows that, number one, anytime you let government get involved in something, there's going to be problems. And number two, the reality was, when you really looked at the situation as it was presented, even as it was put forth in the paper yesterday, I believe the numbers were, 100 million checks and only 1.6 million potential issues, a 1.6% potential problem, and of that 1.6% was even smaller amount that really proved to be potentially problematic. So I think that the current system as it exists is good. We just have to do a better job, like any other thing in life, and it doesn't necessarily mean anything that, whether it's government-related or otherwise, even in our own jobs, there's always things we can do to make things better, and simply, in this particular case, we just have to kind of tighten the reins a little bit and hold people accountable for the things that they're doing on a day-to-day basis to make the system better. I want to also remind our callers, our listeners, if you want to get on the show today, you can give us a call at 457-1290. That's 457-1290, and we'd be more than glad to discuss any of the issues that are out there, whether it's firearm selection, if you're interested in buying a gun, if you're interested in getting involved in the shooting sports, how do you do that? We have, I think, some pretty good advice for people in those particular areas. I also want to encourage people that if you're interested, if you kind of got an idea of the gun you want to buy, but you're not quite sure, take advantage of our Try It Before You Buy It program at the range. That's a program where you just come in and for the $10 rental fee of a gun, and then the cost of a box of ammo, you get to actually shoot the gun that you think you want to buy, so you can find out if you really want to buy it. And I will just give you a hint, if you're nice enough to our staff members, they might even let you compare it to the second gun that you might be considering, if you are so inclined to try that. And I know people have, for example, they've come in and they thought they wanted to buy a Springfield XD, and they figure, well, I know that Glock 19 is a pretty nice gun, and I'd really like to try that too. Well, go ahead and try it. That's just a great opportunity for you to really get a feel for the gun in your hand, see how it recoils, see how your hand deals with it, see how the trigger feels. It's quite different than just going into a store and handling a gun, which is the common way people buy guns, but it gives you an extra opportunity to do that. And if you purchase the gun from us, we take the cost of that rental off the cost of the gun if you do that on the same day. So there's a couple of great opportunities for you to take advantage of the services that we offer down at the range, and I certainly want to encourage you to do so. Yesterday, I had I'm going to put Mark on the spot again today. I wanted to I know this is the first time we're back on the air on Saturday in 10 to 12 weeks after being preempted by UD basketball and football, and there's been some pretty significant changes to the law. The most recent or the most relevant that people seem to be asking about is what's the crux of the restaurant carry bill that passed back in September. And I just want Mark to kind of highlight the points of that to our listeners, because we obviously have a little bit different audience today. I know those who were up yesterday braving the early hours at 6 to 8 might be a little bit different than the group that decided to take a nap today after the mad rush of the Thanksgiving holiday along with Black Friday, and maybe they didn't get a chance to join us and they've not heard any official update as to what might have happened. So, Mark, if you could just talk a little bit about that law.
Sure, glad to. There were two bills that passed and went into effect on the 30th of September. The first is the one that got the most attention, and that's the restaurant carry. It also affected the way you can carry in your car. And what that allowed is that if you have a license to carry concealed handgun, you can now carry into a restaurant that serves alcohol, where before that was a criminal offense just to go through the door carrying your firearm. That no longer is the case, unless, of course, they've posted a sign, and like any private business, they're able to choose whether or not they want to put up a sign that says no firearms allowed. And if they do that, then that would be like any other place that you have. There's a sign that tells you you can't carry. You need to respect that sign and respect the wishes of the ownership or management that says we don't want you to be our customers. I mean, that may not be what they're intending when they say that, but that's the bottom line. So they don't want you to carry your firearm into that restaurant. And if that's the case, then we need to honor that. But unless there is a sign that's posted now, you can go into a restaurant that serves alcohol and you've not committed any offense. There's not any legal problem there. It does require that you not consume any alcohol at all. So if you go into a restaurant that normally you might have a beer with dinner, that's not any longer possible as long as you're carrying your firearm. So you can choose to go have dinner with your family, but you just need to have water, iced tea, or whatever other non-alcoholic beverage is your preference. And that really is a kind of it's a good change. Of course, that's my opinion on what's good, but I think it's a great change. It allows people to no longer have to leave their firearm unsupervised in a vehicle as they go into a restaurant when they would normally be carrying anyway up to that point. It hasn't caused any problems, and that's been one of the things that has been, there were all sorts of dire predictions as to the terrible things that would happen when we can allow what they argued was mixing guns and alcohol, and clearly that's not the case because of the prohibition on consumption. So that's been really, really a good change, and there's not been any problems. There was one that got some publicity that really had nothing to do with that law because the actions that person took were illegal both before and after the law went into effect. So it's easy to say because it happened in a bar that therefore that's because of this law, but that clearly wasn't the case. This person was going to break the law no matter what. The other change that was in that same law is the change to car carry. There used to be only four ways that a licensed person could carry a loaded firearm in a motor vehicle, and that is no longer the case. There are now no restrictions. So any safe way that you would carry a firearm, whether it be in a holster on your person, whether you want to put it in a glove box, you want to have it, those are all legal ways. Used to be those were the only ways, in a glove box, in a purse, in a case that closed. In a locking case that was not in plain sight, but a case would have to be in plain sight. And now there are none of those restrictions apply. So you can carry the firearm in any way that you choose. Some people that like to tuck the firearm in their belt without a holster, which we've mentioned several times, we don't recommend. But because if that's the way people choose to do that, and they want to carry that way, it's no longer illegal. People that maybe want to have a holster mounted in their vehicle. I know there are some holsters specifically designed for that, and people that have a truck or something with a center console might want to mount a holster, put the gun in that holster to make it readily accessible but not readily visible and easy to get to, but that was illegal before, and now it is not any longer that way. And so if you can, any safe way that you choose to carry your firearm in a motor vehicle is perfectly legal. We need to take a break here. And then we will come back after just a few minutes of commercials, and we will take your calls at 457-1290. If you'd like to get on the show, 457-1290 is the number here into the studio. And then we'll have some other issues that we also want to pick up, because there was a call at the end of the show yesterday that asked a question we didn't have time to deal with. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip, and we're glad to have you with us today. Right before the break, we were talking about some of the changes in Ohio law that went into effect on the 30th of September, and there's one other that I hadn't addressed yet, and that's restoration of rights. For people that have had their firearms rights restored in Ohio, they were not recognized by the federal government at the time because there was still one prohibition left, and that was that you could not have possession of what's considered dangerous ordnance. And without going into a big legal definition on that, if you had that would include an automatic weapon and so forth. And because that prohibition was left in Ohio law, the federal government said, unless you restore all the firearms rights, then we won't recognize any of them. So that's why that that bill was created to allow the rights restoration to actually have an effect that would allow someone to buy a handgun or any kind of firearm. So that went into effect, but there was one other change that was also part of that law, and it removed misdemeanor drug convictions from being a firearms disability. So that means that those people who maybe had had a minor misdemeanor possession of marijuana back, 20 or 30 years ago when they were in school, and were therefore, because of the way the Ohio law was written, could no longer possess a firearm, that went away. Now, there was one other thing that did not happen that I had identified and I had kind of hoped would get changed in the law, but it did not. And that was that the requirements for issuance of a concealed handgun license did not change. So even that minor possession charge from 20 or 30 years ago still creates a condition that prohibits the issuance of a concealed handgun license. That means that people who have had their rights restored or people who had had a minor misdemeanor drug conviction back some time ago, and that is no longer a firearms disability, can still possess the firearm, but they cannot get a license to carry a concealed handgun. In order for them to carry a firearm, a handgun for personal defense, they're going to have to carry it openly, and they won't be able to carry it in their motor vehicle. And that I think that's an unfortunate turn of events. I think that was something that probably could have been changed and certainly would not have created any risk to society to have made that change and included those people into the full realm of their rights being restored. But that's the way the law was. So if you have a problem with that, then you need to contact your state legislators and let them know that you think there's that one more tweak that ought to get made. And that'll obviously it'll take a while, but at least as long as it's still on their plate, then it's something that could possibly get addressed.
Well, it makes a lot of sense, too, because when you look at that minor misdemeanor state provision, basically superseding the Second Amendment constitutional right. That's what it comes down to. And, the first 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution are kind of the core of our legal system, and yet we can allow a minor misdemeanor. Basically, for those who don't realize it, a minor misdemeanor offense in Ohio carries no jail time and up to $100 fine. That's the maximum penalty for a minor misdemeanor. So you're looking at a very low-level crime for somebody who was in college, who did something stupid, made a bad decision. Now you're going to tell him he cannot carry a firearm for the rest of his life, regardless of his life circumstances, and he's not able to defend himself in those situations. It seems like a pretty harsh decision given the facts and the reality of those. But that's the way it is now, and I think Mark says it best when he tells us we just have to hope the law evolves over time, and I think it will.
Every change that we've had to the firearms law since concealed carry went into effect in 2004 has been an improvement. Yeah. It has increased liberty. It has increased the ability for law-abiding citizens to do what they need to do and to be prepared to do whatever they might need to do in that situation that most people hope doesn't ever happen, but
I
want to be prepared.
I think it's important to mention that it's been the opinions of citizens voicing their opinions to their congresspeople and state representatives that have resulted in these changes coming to the fore and then being passed. And I think that's what's going to happen. It's going to continue to evolve. The discussion would have been way different in 2004 if we'd be sitting here today and thinking about what might be in the future. We talk about how concealed carry has evolved over the last 8 years, and I think it will continue to evolve to where it will become basically – like we can't believe this 10 or 15 year in our nation's history that we even had to address the issues that we do.
Yeah, that would be a wonderful thing. There certainly are some bills that are pending that would greatly open to the concealed carry to anybody. What they're calling constitutional carry, it's not exactly that simply because there are still plenty of restrictions. There would still be some restricted areas. But, for example, it would address the question of carry on college campuses. Now, there have been now 7 attacks in the last few months at major schools in Ohio, and students who could otherwise be eligible to carry a firearm because they're over 21 years old, they can go through the training. Many of these people are either military or have delayed their education for some reason, or maybe graduate students, and they have no ability to carry a firearm legally on campus. They can carry it in their motor vehicle and leave it in the vehicle, but then when they go on campus and go to do the things that they're going to do, they aren't going to be able to protect themselves. And it's not in the vehicle that people are having a problem. It's walking around campus and going through some of the places that are a little bit less protected, maybe less lit. You know, often they're told, well, don't go walking around campus alone. You know, you should go with somebody. Well, that's fine if you've got somebody to go with, but that's not always practical. And why should you have to do that? Why should we have to be dependent on someone else for our safety? That's just ridiculous. Yeah. It's our own responsibility. It's something that we need to do. It's something that we should need to be able to do. And I think that's something that will come. But we've, like we said earlier, there have been an awful lot of changes, and there have been, every one of them have been an improvement, and so we just need to keep working in that direction. In case you happen to miss it this afternoon, right before our show, there was a new radio program that has been added to the Ask the Expert lineup. It's called Retirement Rescue Radio. It was on this afternoon at 1 o'clock. It'll be on at 1 o'clock every week. Hosts Rob Russell and Curve Miller give help to you and others about correct knowledge to properly plan for retirement and having the money to do so. So if you're on next week, waiting for us to come on the air, get on a little bit early at 1 o'clock, right after Greg Sucker's Auto Talk and right before Shooting from the Hip. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip, and we're glad to have you with us today. Shooting from the Hip is sponsored by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor shooting range and firearms training center, and we have our new 2012 schedule available on our website. So if you've been waiting to find out when new classes would be available and what we're going to be doing after the start of the new year, you can go out to sim-trum and you can see our schedule, pre-register for classes, and figure out how you want to work those into your regularly busy schedule. We do have one person on the phone for us, and if you'd like to be on the call, you'd like to be on the show, give us a call at 457-1290. 457-1290 is the number here into the studio, and we'd be happy to take your call as well. Let's go out and talk to Steve in Miamisburg, who has a question for us. So, Steve, thanks very much for calling.
Hi, guys. I have a quick question. I have a pump shotgun and a semi-automatic pistol with factory mags. I was wondering if it's okay to keep the gun loaded for extended periods, both guns loaded without for extended periods without doing damage to the springs in the magazine. I'm worried about losing tension. Is that any problem, or am I mistaken?
Well, Steve, I think the argument actually has been presented both ways. There are people who say that you should periodically release the spring pressure and allow them to them expand, and then there's other people who say it's not a big issue. That being the case, and I think it's 50-50, I don't know that there's any definitive source that's done any extensive actual testing to make that determination. The general rule of thumb is to periodically use the gun and or relieve the spring tension, and that makes good sense from the standpoint of changing the ammo out periodically. And in the case of a self-defense gun, that's on an annual basis. As far as changing the ammo you use, we recommend that you get self-defense ammo on a yearly basis and shoot up, not because it's bad, it's just because it's a good protocol. I think the best answer to your dilemma is to periodically shoot the gun, because it accomplishes two things. It gives you the training and handling of the gun, and it also gives the springs a chance not only to relieve the tension, but to operate the way they're supposed to work. And to me, just from a common sense standpoint, it makes sense to try it periodically to let it do what it was designed to do, as opposed to being locked up in that fully compressed condition for a long period of time. That being said, you know, it goes back to what I said at the beginning, there is no definitive information that says that long-term storage of ammunition in compressed magazines is going to result in any failure. And I will also mention to you, just as testament to that, many people will carry a gun for a living. About the only time that they will relieve the spring tension in their magazines, particularly their backup magazines, is when they go to the range for qualification or go to practice on their own. And, you know, there's a full array of people, you know, that's all the way from maybe once every couple weeks to once a year. So I'm not aware of any problems where the spring tension on a shotgun or a semi-automatic pistol has caused a malfunction that's created an issue that people were concerned about.
Okay, well, great. That answers the question. Thanks for all your time.
Okay, thank you
for
calling.
Thanks for calling very much. Let's go out and talk to Kurt and Troy, who has called into the show. Kurt, welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. I keep trying to catch your show, and I keep missing it at times, either a sports game or something on.
Yeah, we've heard there might be a game or something going on today. I don't know what it is, but
I don't know either. I was trying to catch your show.
Well, glad you're listening.
Deer season coming up, obviously gun. So I have a 44 mag pistol, and what I did, my sight, I'm 51 years old, and I'm not all that accurate just with the pistol. So what I did is I made a custom stock for it, more like a shotgun or a rifle stock. Now, like in Ohio, you're not allowed to shoot with a rifle.
Actually, what you just did is you created a short-barreled rifle, which is a National Firearms Act regulated firearm. And so you want to take that stock off now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's an issue that has recently been brought to our attention on a number of occasions. We just had someone else, I can't remember the specific circumstances, Mark, but someone came into the range and was talking about doing that same thing. Matter of fact, it might have been one of my other staff workers who brought up the fact that someone was going to bring one into the range. They had purchased a Ruger Charger, which is by definition and by actual assignment, is a pistol, but he said he was having a hard time shooting it as a pistol, which is quite the case. Yep. It comes with a bipod. It's designed to be shot sort of like a rifle. So he said, I'm going to go ahead and I'm a machinist and I'm an engineer and I'm going to design a stock for it and shoot it as a rifle. The problem is you could probably do that, as you've probably been able to do, but you run into an issue with the federal law, which I believe it went into effect in 1986, Mark. Maybe it was even sooner.
I'm not sure when that particular provision went in. Well, a short barrel rifle has been a definition for quite some time.
Yeah.
So, basically, you can't take a handgun and turn it into a rifle, and that's basically what you've done.
Okay, yeah, because there was something I was reading that said it needed to be under 21 inches in length. And that's what I read somewhere online trying to find different information. So I tried keeping it under that. And I thought, well, it's still a pistol.
As soon as you have a shoulder stock on it, it's no longer a pistol.
Okay.
And that's where you can run into problems. And what was the reason for you just want to use that gun for hunting? Is that the issue? And then you're having trouble being able to make accurate shots using it just as a pistol, not having the stability of the shoulder support?
I have a red dot scope on it, and it's like, okay, I'm fairly decent. But my accuracy, I thought, well, I'll just go ahead. This is a lot better if I can pull it back in and have a better grip on it. I'm just more accurate with it.
Yeah. Well, let me offer you an alternative of maybe some shooting sticks. Have you tried that?
No, I haven't.
I mean, that I think might be a good legal option for you. And, shooting sticks are relatively inexpensive. And what that does is afford you the stability. You and I are the same age. We've got the same issues. We cannot defeat Mother Nature, okay? we can help ourselves with the tools that are out there. But as we get older, we have a little bit of shimmy in our grip, our eyesight. We don't see things the way we should. But we get blurred vision. We got to wear corrective lenses. That changes the whole picture. But I think there's ways that we can get around that. And I think that shooting sticks and or some other reasonable support, depending on the location, whether you're in a blind or in some sort of a sheltered area, you might be able to make yourself a area where you'd be able to provide the support for the gun and or your hands to give you a little bit more stable sight picture.
Yeah, you can add support to the ground, but you can't, or even to your knee, as far as that goes, to help hold the gun steady, but you can't bring it in, you can't add a stock to it.
Okay, now on this, because I just made one out of cherry for my son. I was going to give it to him over Christmas, so I shouldn't do that.
Yeah, that would probably not be the best thing.
Because that's a federal law. It's not supposed to have that. That's considered a...
Yeah, as opposed to looking online, just look up under the Federal Firearms Act when they talk about short-barreled rifle and prohibited weapons, and there's some pretty clear language about converting pistols to rifles.
All right, super. I appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks for calling the show.
That was a great call. And one other thing I just wanted to mention, kind of related as far as popular misconceptions that people could run into problems. In 2008, when one of the changes was enacted to the CHL law, there was this issue of what constituted a loaded gun. And obviously, when you think loaded gun, you make an obvious assumption that that's when there's bullets in the gun and then it's loaded. Well,
if you pull the trigger, it's going to go bang.
For some strange reason, loaded was determined to be, even if it's not loaded, if a gun has a magazine, if there's a magazine that goes to the semi-automatic pistol, and you have the magazine loaded, and even if the magazine's not in the gun, that constitutes being loaded. And where this comes into be an issue is when people come to the range, many times they'll load 4, 5, 6, 10 magazines at home because they don't want to spend the time. They want to get to the range, shoot their gun, go home, clean their gun, and be done with it. They'll load up beforehand, they'll pack them into their gun bag, and they come down the range and shoot them. Sounds fine and dandy, but it's against Ohio law, and it's unfortunate. That's one area that I think that we definitely need to get changed. The most common area where that comes into place is with rifle mags. When people get a .223 rifle and they're going to go out to Spring Valley or to an outdoor range, and depending on weather, they don't want to be standing out there in December or January or the heat of July loading their mags. So they do it at home. They just load the mags, put them in their range bag, go down, load up the gun, shoot it. When they get ready to leave, maybe they don't shoot them all. They go back home. Well, they're technically in violation, or legally they're in violation of law both to and from, because they had rounds in the magazine that was for that gun in the car. And I would hope that rational, reasonable decision-making would prevail if somebody would unfortunately get into a situation like that, because the intent of the law, I don't think, was designed in any way, shape, or form to harass those kinds of law-abiding citizens.
Well, and even though that is still an onerous provision, it's far better than what it replaced. Before, it was just ammunition ready at hand, and that term wasn't defined. So whether the ammunition was in a magazine or not, if it was in the same bag with your gun, it could be determined, and in fact had been in the past, that that ammunition is therefore ready at hand, and therefore that constitutes a loaded gun. So that is no longer the case. The distance between the gun and the ammunition is no longer relevant. But then it also means that if the ammunition is in a magazine or speed loader, anywhere in the vehicle with a gun that it can be used with, then that gun is considered loaded. So there's a lot of people that don't completely understand that, but it's an important point.
When I mentioned the problem. Now, the quick fix is just to leave the ammunition in its original container,
right,
or in a separate container and not in any of the magazines, and you're okay, and you're just going to have to load the magazines when you get to the range. That's the quick fix to the problem. But I wanted to bring that up because it comes up often. We just had a guy the other day who came into the range in that situation, and we corrected the problem right away.
Yeah, oops. Let's go out and talk to Mark, who's calling in from Springboro. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi. How can we help you?
I have a question about, I know that the new law that was just recently passed about concealed carry in a vehicle.
Yes.
And I never did fully understand, so I know you can straighten me out on this. Does the weapon have to be concealed in the vehicle? In other words, if you had it in a holster and mounted the holster, say, alongside your seat or alongside the console, or that if you looked in the window, you could, the police officer could see the weapon, is that illegal?
No, that's not illegal. In fact, when the law was first passed, that was required. You had to have it where it was in plain sight any time it was in the vehicle, and it's no longer required.
It had to be on your person at that also, though, didn't it?
Well, there were other ways that you could carry, but it could be in a locked case or in a case as well as in a holster on your person. But if it was in a holster, regardless, it had to be in plain view if it was in a holster.
Okay.
And so
as of today, and I wouldn't want to do this, but if it's by some odd circumstance it happened that you just had the weapon laying on the seat,
right,
and you're in traffic, you stop at a red light, and you're in a car and somebody else is in a truck, and they can look out their window,
right,
and see into your window and see a weapon laying on the seat, and that's not illegal.
That's correct.
It's not illegal. However, I will tell you there are people out there who just when they see a gun, they're going to dial 911. They're going to think you're a bad guy. So you're going to probably have law enforcement intervention. Just handle it appropriately like you're required to do by law. Keep your hands in plain sight. Let them know that you're a CHL. You have the gun in the car, and everything should be fine. But you're probably going to get some attention.
Okay, that's all I need to know.
Okay.
Thanks very much for calling the show.
Thank you. Enjoy your show. Thank you.
Appreciate that very much. We need to take a break here in just a few seconds, so we'll ask Chuck to wait for us, and we'll come back after the break and take his call. If you'd like to be on the show, give us a call at 457-1290. That'll dial you into the Master Control Studio, and we'll find out what your call is about and try to get you up on the air, assuming we don't run out of time. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners back to the show. And yesterday morning, we had a caller call about, he wanted us to give us our opinion about lasers on firearms. And I want to real quickly just mention that generally we're not very favorable as far as people using lasers. And I think there's two reasons for that. The main reason is I think there's a misconception that a laser on a gun will make up for poor weapons handling. And I think that's a terrible misconception to make, because just because you have a laser that emits a beam doesn't mean that you're going to be accurate in your fire. And I know that to be the case personally, because we did some pretty early testing with some of the lasers that were on police firearms, and within a very short period of time, interestingly enough, and I'm not going to mention the manufacturer, we decided that lasers were not our best option because of some of the limitations. The other limitation is it's a mechanical item, and on one of the manufacturers that sent out guns with lasers just earlier this year, we got two of them, and within the first week or two, the lasers went out. Not because the battery was bad, but because when you take something that goes boom and you attach something that requires some sort of fine mechanical operation to work, the boom usually wins out, and I think there was an issue there, and it was problematic. And in addition, the other side of that, I want to tell you that if you have some physical restrictions that prohibit you from being able to extend your arms and getting a good sight alignment, front and back sight, that using a laser is the only option, and it's a decent option for people who have some limitations along those lines. And I will say that we have an individual who shoots in our competitive league. He's an older gentleman, but you'd never know it by his scores. He's very good. He's made the adjustments. But the big thing is, here's the difference. He practices weekly. In addition to coming to league, he goes and shoots at least one time in between league. So he's used to handling his gun and does a good job. So generally, lasers, I think it's not a good idea. I would rather you learn to shoot the gun properly by using good handling skills, making sure you understand how the gun works, learn how to line up your sights, and ultimately understand the difference between sighted fire and instinctive point shooting at close distances, and practice that. That being said, if you have other questions in future shows, we'd be more than glad to debate that issue with you, but we're just basing that on what we see out there in the classes that we teach and the people that we confront.
Some people talk about them for night, and we much more prefer night sights. I mean, if that's an essential accessory for a personal defense firearm, and it's far less expensive than lasers, and it's really more effective in our opinion. So, yeah. All right, let's go out to the phones again and talk to Chuck in Tip City. Chuck, thanks very much for calling the show. How can we help you today?
Hi, I came in on just the very end of your conversation when you were talking about people going to a range with loaded magazines and then shooting their magazines and maybe having one loaded
right. And
coming home with it that they could be in trouble. And my question is this: if you have a CCW license, wouldn't you be allowed to come home with a loaded gun?
Well, that applies only to a handgun. So, yeah, the handgun, any handgun you would have in the vehicle would be perfectly all right, as long as you're considering that is you're carrying it pursuant to your license.
And as long as you're a licensee.
Right, long as you're, concealed handgun license won't apply to a rifle. So if you have a rifle magazine, then those definitely have to be unloaded.
Well, that obviously was the part of the conversation I missed. I just heard the back end of it, and I thought, holy cow, don't tell me they changed this again.
No. And for that clarification, and the point I was bringing is that people who do not have a CHL, people who are just starting out in the shooting sports, or maybe some who've been doing it for a long time, they don't realize that provision is in effect, because what they end up doing is they load up their magazines and they go to the range. It makes sense. It makes total sense.
Yeah, they would be in trouble then without the license.
Right. Absolutely. But the unfortunate thing is that law needs to be changed, because that the intent of that law was never to deal with the law-abiding citizen.
Chuck, thanks very much.
Thank you for clearing that up.
Thanks for calling the show. Right. Let's go out and talk to Kevin in Beaver Creek real quick before the end of the show. We got about a minute left. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. You guys are great, very informative. I have a question for you. I inherited some guns, some firearms, some black powder and regular shotguns and so forth from my father-in-law, who passed away years ago. And my question is, we're going to look to sell them. I wasn't sure where would be the best place to go, and if there are any particular laws that I have to be concerned about taking them to and from a location.
Okay, as a private citizen, there aren't any requirements for registration or background checks or anything like that. It really kind of is your responsibility to make sure that it's somebody that is appropriate to have a firearm. It really will help if you know them. Otherwise, you can go through a licensed dealer who can then do that background check. There are, for black powder is not a problem at all. So that, you know, that's not an issue. It, black powder, you don't even have to do a background check as long as it can't be converted to use a cartridge.
Okay.
And as an inheritance, you don't have any problem with that either.
Okay, great.
My first advice to you would be to reach out to a friend or neighbor, maybe somebody who's in the, into hunting, and see if they have, they're affiliated with a group, whether it's one of the local gun clubs or whatever the case might be, because you might find some people who are interested in those guns and will pay premium price as opposed to just going to a gun store and seeing what they'll give you.
We're done. Thanks very much for being with us. This is Mark and Jeff out of here for Shooting From the Hip. Be with us next week.